Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is a shadowy member of the new show on CW, DC's Stargirl. Neil Jackson is joining us today, and he plays Icicle, known as the leader of the Injustice Society of America. And we're going to find out exactly how Neil enjoys playing a bad guy. Hi, Neil.
Hello, Summer. How are you? a shadowy member. Ooh, sounds so ominous, doesn't it?
Well, you know, your character's behavior has been a little sketchy so far.
In your opinion, I think he's completely justified.
Well, let's talk about this. This isn't actually your first time playing a super-powered superhero. And how are you taking to actually being a comic book known quantities, let's say?
I mean, it's interesting. Yeah, I've played a few characters sort of in the superhero world before. First one being 16 years ago, we did a TV version of the Blade franchise, mm-hmm. Where I played the main nemesis. So I'm not a stranger to it, but it's a fun world to play in. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Geoff Johns. I've been friends with him. He actually wrote on the Blade series 16 years ago, so I've been friends with him for 16 years, and I knew of this comic book that he created that was very personal to him, that he did as an homage after the death of his sister. And when he asked me to come on board, I was incredibly honored and flattered. And then when he told me the character I was going to be playing, I mean, you said the names there, he was like Icicle and the Injustice Society. I was like, what is this? Is this like an episode of My Little Pony? It doesn't sound particularly scary or anything. And then he pitched me the story and I fell in love with it. I love how complex his character is. I mean, once he explained to me that he's a man who fell in love and that woman ended up ostensibly being murdered by a big pharma company's neglect, and he is robbed of this love, and he becomes incredibly angry and vitriolic and wants to make sure that nobody suffers the same injustice ever again. So he makes it his life mission to make the people who are directly and indirectly responsible for his wife's death pay. But then in addition to that, he wants to make sure that nobody ever has to have this kind of injustice happen to them. So in many ways, he sees himself as the hero, which is what every good villain should be, I think. Every good villain is justified in their own opinion.
So did you get any other tips on the, you know, Icicle's background, how, you know, they wanted you to play him? Were you familiar with the comic at all? Had you actually read any of those old comics?
I hadn't read the comic and wasn't really that familiar with him. And what I did is the moment he offered it to me, I read the script, and the script was the pilot script was amazing. And then I went online and Googled Icicle and Jordan McKent and various iterations of this character that have happened in both the comic books, and he's appeared a couple of times on TV. And I realized really quickly that none of them were the version that Jeff had created for this TV series. So as much as we wanted to honor the stuff that come before, this was a chance to create something completely new. So me and Jeff had lots and lots of conversations about it. You know, first of all, we were talking about the costume and the way the costume wanted to look, because in the comic books, he ranges from being this militant character dressed in full fatigues and bulletproof jacket all the way through to being quite camp as like sort of Jack Frost impish character. And we talked about kind of what bits we wanted to borrow, but what bits we wanted to create brand new. And for me, a big thing was this backstory that I just said, that he's an incredibly sad character. And I always like to kind of think of in colors, sort of emotional colors. And I said, well, the obvious color for Icicle is blue. But I think that translates to him as a person as well. Instead of making him angry and vitriolic and the fact that, you know, that he wants to burn the world down, why not make him just deeply sad? And he is motivated by the weight of this pain that happened to him, but he takes no joy in what he's doing. He sees himself as a necessary evil to rid himself and the world of the evils that caused this to happen to him. So we really lent into that pain and just made him an incredibly sad and solitary and pained character.
Well, you mentioned him having a deep backstory, and as we've seen in comics and TV and movies, the best villains are the ones who are played as if they know they are the hero of their own story, because that's how they see themselves. And so were you inclined to take inspiration from any of your favorite villains, or did you just create this attitude from Holdcroft?
The closest one, and we talked about it, and I know I'm crossing DC Marvel lines, which is blaspheming, but we talked about Thanos. I mean, Thanos in the Marvel universe with the Avengers series is a very similar character in the fact that he has seen a glimpse of the universe, and the universe is overpopulated, and he believes that by kicking his fingers and indiscriminately wiping out 50% of the universe, he will give the other 50% a far greater chance at life. And though he takes no joy in killing, he realizes that the entire universe and the population therein will be better off and thrive as a result of this one heinous act. So again, he sees himself as necessarily evil. And I love the energy that they put into that character, because there was this weight of just this tiredness of this burden. Like he sees himself in very much the same way as Jordan sees himself, as the only person with the strength of character capable of making this incredibly hard decision. And therefore, he can be unwavering in the way he approaches it. One person dying to make sure that the plan succeeds is a drop in the ocean. It's very Machiavellian that the ends justify the means. And that was a character that we looked at and we talked about in terms of the energetic weight of what we wanted to portray with Jordan.
Well, so far, only 5 episodes have aired, but for you, what was the most fun in playing either Icicle or Jordan?
It's a good question. There's a scene that comes right at the end, and obviously I won't spoil anything, but I think it doesn't take a comic book law scientist to realize that the Justice Society of America are ultimately going to clash with the Injustice Society of America in one big final battle at the end. And there is a moment at the end where Jordan gets to passionately explain what he's doing and why, to convince all the non-believers that his path is the right one. And it was just so beautifully written. When I read it, I called Jeff up and thanked him, because it was just this amazing moment that kind of came across part evangelical priest and part humanitarian, which is something we just never get to see with villains. Normally villains are either skew on the one side to sort of mustache twirling, and you don't get their motivations, or they're too passionate and they tinge into sort of melodrama. But this one, when you hear him speak, it's hard not to go, "Huh, I kind of get it." You know, as much as his plan involves quite a few people dying, when you hear what he says, you kind of go, it kind of makes sense. I kind of get it, which is a beautiful thing to make the audiences conflicted. And it was so much fun to play.
I like the way you said, trying to convince the non-believers.
Yeah.
That
well,
just,
it is, right? I mean,
that adds such a level of belief and determination. He has a vision. He has a goal. He's not manic. He's not irrational in his sense. And he's not, overbearing about it. He's not crazy about it. He has this goal that he sees as the right path. And all the people opposing him are non-believers. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's he has seen a perspective on the world that is very zoomed out, very macro, and a lot of people don't look macro. A lot of people look micro. A lot of people look about: am I safe? Are my loved ones safe? And in this small nucleus, they exist. Where he, through a result of what happened to Christine, his wife, has zoomed his perspective right out and looked and gone, no, there's a cancer here. And if we can cut this cancer out, everything else will be healthy around it, but it necessitates, there's going to be death because the cancer has to be removed. But it's a cancer that we all can look at and go, oh yeah, that does exist. It's just he is the one that's seeing it, and he is the one with the plan of how to remove it. And he 100% believes that he is absolutely on the right path to doing the right thing. And in playing him and exploring him, I'm not 100% convinced he's wrong either. I'm kind of sitting there going, yeah, look, if this was in the real world, it would be a bit of pill to swallow. What's really interesting is kind of having shot all of this last year, but now with it airing during the pandemic, there's a lot of things that kind of parallel with what's going on, because ultimately I think we all have realized that the result of this pandemic, this global pandemic that's caused the entire world to stop or at least slow right down, it has healed some of the things in society that we needed to heal. And it's also brought to the fore some things in society that we needed to discuss in order to heal even more. And so it's interesting having been a part of a show that the ultimate plan of the villain, I'm choosing my words incredibly carefully, not spoil anything, is in some ways to force people to look at the things that are broken in society and mend them. And ironically, we're kind of going through that purge at the moment.
Yeah, I'm not sure anything's truly been healed yet, but we've gotten a great broad vision of,
oh yeah,
yeah, it can be healed and it can still work. So there's a little bit of,
well, in order for things to be healed, we first need to be made aware of what the problem is, and I think that's what's happening right now.
Yes.
Not to get political, but we're being shown a mirror is being held up, and we're not liking what we see in it, and that's the first step to change.
Yeah.
Yep. But back to superhero stuff.
Well, like I said, not to get into too many spoilers, but what do you see a season two for Stargirl that allows Jordan to, shall we say, develop further and maybe change some minds of the people around him opposing him?
There's sort of two questions there. The first answer is I cannot see a world without a season two. I mean, just in terms of numbers, we're holding 91% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, which is just an incredible score. The audience mm-hmm. score is at 85 or 86, which is an incredible score. So people on the critical and the public side are just seemingly loving the show. And the numbers have held from the pilot episode all the way through. I don't know the numbers for episode 5 yet, but the first 4 episodes, the numbers all held. So the viewing figures held on the CW. And that, by anybody's money, is a hit. So I would be incredibly surprised if in the next few weeks we don't get an announcement that season 2 is definitely happening. As for Jordan and Jordan's journey in that, unfortunately, that's up to Jeff, and I have no idea. I would love to see a world where he gets to build an army around him that sees and appreciates his vision, and he gets to move towards achieving that goal and convincing the non-believers. It's going to be entirely up to Jeff and what Jeff's plan is, and I trust that completely.
Cool. Well, what else are you working on or planning to work on when doors start opening again?
Well, I've done a TV series called Absentia, which is an Amazon Prime TV series made by Sony TV. And we shot the third season of that just before Christmas. And that airs on Amazon Prime on July 17th. So I'm excited about that. It's a Very, very different show, a very dark FBI thriller. And my character is a medical doctor who struggled with addiction problems. And so it's a very, very emotional character to play, which has been really fun exploring. And then in September, I forget the date, I think it's towards the end of September, I have the prequel to the Kingsman movies coming out, The King's Man, set in World War One. It's about the origin story of where the Kingsman franchise came from. And I can't wait to see that film. I've seen some of it while doing ADR. And that's a different beast again. I mean, a massive, massive budget project all set in World War One. And I play this high-ranking captain in the British Army who is very involved in Kingsman's plans to save the world and prevent the war. So it's going to be a fun summer for me in terms of stuff that's coming out.
Yeah, I'd seen the description of The King's Man. I'm like, why didn't they do that story before doing Golden Circle?
Right. I mean, I think everybody was a little disappointed by the Golden Circle. The first Kingsman was such an amazing
Oh,
franchise, an
yeah.
amazing one, and the Golden Circle was fun. It just didn't quite live up to it, and I think that's what they've done. They've done a course correct, and this I can only go on the script and my part of it, but it was an amazing script, very, very fun, kind of brilliantly weaving a historical fact with a little poetic license. And the bits that I've seen of it are epic. It's going to be a really fun film, and I think this is going to launch a brand new franchise in terms of the Kingsman in history, which is going to be fun.
I'm, like I said, I'm looking forward to that one. Ever since I heard the first synopsis of it, I'm like, yeah, I want to see this. But
That was it was one of those it was one of those films. It's just they built. I mean, we've all seen 1917 now, the Sam Mendes film, which was incredible. And to walk through these trenches that they built, in it, they took over a massive farm just outside of London, and just built this labyrinth of trenches. And then over the trenches was multiple farmers' fields that have been converted into World War One no man's land. Complete with bomb craters, decapitated horses and barbed wire and everything else. And so once we were in there and we're dressed in the World War One garb, and I've got a wonderful moustache on, and I'm kind of marching up and down these, galvanizing the troops, and then we climb up the ladders to look over into no man's land. It was almost no acting necessary. It was the complete suspension of disbelief needed to kind of throw yourself into the world that had been created. It was truly epic, and the look on our faces when we go over into no man's land is genuine, because you're just like, God, this looks terrifying. The idea that across this barren death land is a group of people who just want to destroy you, and we're crawling our way towards them. It was a very surreal and amazing experience to have.
Cool. Well, I can't wait to see that. But during your quarantine session, was there anything you watched catch up on that you hadn't had a chance to see yet?
Yeah, I mean, I've binged and watched a lot of stuff. But what I've loved is I've been watching a lot of classic movies. I've just been going back and just watching movies that I haven't seen in decades. Like going back, I'm a big Jimmy Stewart fan, so going back and watching It's a Wonderful Life and Harvey, and some of those. Just recently watched Tootsie, All About Eve. I've just been going back through these wonderful movies and sort of sitting and luxuriating in these beautiful old movies again. So that's been fun for me.
Awesome. So where can people find you online to be able to keep track of Stargirl and anything else you're working on?
Well, I'm on social media, so I'm on Instagram and Twitter at the Neil Jackson, and then my website neiljackson.me. You can look there, and there's my music is on there, and the short films that I've written and directed are all available on there. So it's sort of one-stop shop for anything from me is neiljackson.me.
Cool. Talk a little bit about your music. What are you doing there?
Well, the music was, I'm not pursuing that so much anymore. The music was a thing that was always a big part of my life. And I played music and always traveled with my guitar. And it was about 5 or 6 years ago, I was doing a pilot episode of I think it was an NBC series. And unfortunately, the series got picked up, but I got recast. And it broke my heart. And so I needed to do something that kind of cleansed my palate of the industry and gave me some creative control again. So I called a friend of mine up who was a music producer, went back to the UK and spent some time in the studio and recorded my first album, which was just a beautiful experience and a cathartic release after the disappointment of being let go from that series. Not for any fault of my own, it was just a creative decision. It also taught. It was always a little part of me that was wondering, could I make a career in music? Would I want to make a career in music? People always responded to my music, and the album came out. I did a couple of gigs to launch it, but I very quickly realized that in order to put my energy into my music career, my acting career would have to take a back step, and it was just at a point when things were starting to move with my acting career. So the guitar still travels around with me, and at some point I'll get in the studio again, but it's very much a hobby at this point.
Awesome. Well, it's nice to have alternative outlets when the one your heart is following kind of lets you down for a little bit, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I've always been a storyteller. I've always loved telling stories. And if it taught me anything, it taught me that whatever the artistic expression, I will always create, whether it be as an actor, a writer, a director, a painter, a musician. I love creating and I love telling stories. So that's the thing I'll do till the day I die.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely have links to all that where people can check out your short films and your music. And Neil, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, my pleasure, Summer. It's been lovely talking to you.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi. Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking, in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic, we've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered in every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama, from heroic alien pets waiting for their families, to herds of literal Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching. Escape Pod has it all at escapepod.org. So buckle up, because it's story time.
Hi guys, this is Tom Allison, and I play Pree on Killjoys, and you're listening to A Slice of Sci-Fi.
So there's still plenty of time for you to catch up on Stargirl. Episode 6 will be airing this coming Tuesday, which I think is June 23rd. And the previous episodes are available on the CW's website. So go catch up. Season 1 will be 13 episodes. And rolling the dice, I'm going to guess that the Blu-ray set would be out in, I'm going to say October, maybe September. But given the time frames, I'm going to say mid-October at the latest. But yes, we're looking forward to seeing the rest of Stargirl. And if you've already been watching the show, leave a comment, check in, let us know how you are enjoying it. As always, if you have any questions or comments, please feel free. Call in. The number is 602-635-6976 or send me an email, summer@sliceofsci-fi.com. And yeah, you can come to the website and leave a comment on this episode. In addition to listening to Slice of Sci-Fi on the website, you can listen through Apple Podcasts, through Stitcher, Google Play Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio Podcasts. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, please leave us a review. Let everyone know that you are enjoying the show and other folks should check it out for themselves. You can follow us on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi. And yes, I do tweet quite a bit about sci-fi, about horror, about indie movies, about animation and anime. Sometimes I will get into discussions about baseball and combat sports. I do follow some MMA. I do prefer boxing because by the time MMA came around, I was too old to start learning leg kicks. I came up old school kickboxing. I think they called it K1. I'm not even sure if that's still around anymore. But yeah, old school full contact kickboxing did not involve arm bars and grappling and leg kicks. They just involved people running around boxing rings and also kicking people, which I found highly enjoyable, and I really, really need to get back to it. You might also catch me tweeting about Premier League and Bundesliga and Liga MX. I am a soccer fan, and a baseball fan, and a fight game fan. And now I'm wondering if Liga MX is going to have any more Star Wars games, because those Star Wars kits were awesome. I want a red Stormtrooper helmet jersey, and I am a diehard Rebel girl. I am not an Empire fan, but those red Stormtrooper helmet jerseys that Liga MX had, I believe it's Tijuana that was in the red. Those looked awesome. Yes. We have goodies for you on YouTube. We have goodies for you on Facebook. And we have goodies for you on the website, sliceofscifi.com. You can also find other entertainment at writersafterdark.com, babylonpodcast.com, charliej.net. There will eventually be content for you over at sciencefiction101.com and horrorstories101.com. It's a long process, and I am only just now building the foundations. Yeah, just roll with it. I'd like to thank everyone who is helping keep these geek entertainment destinations online. Your support through Patreon and PayPal do keep these websites up and running, do keep the media for the podcasts flowing. So thank you all. If you would like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Or if a donation every now and then is more your speed, you can use paypal.me/scifisummer. There are also some perks available for patrons. There are books here, there are DVDs here, there are Blu-rays here that need to go to new homes. So when your name is pulled from the hat, if you're a Patreon supporter, check your Patreon messages. You may be eligible for a prize and not even know it yet. But that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.